Hi, I'm Molly Stern, Communications Consultant with the International Volunteer Program Association. And today we are having our first ever podcast as part of a new series we're launching to explore the different member organizations that are part of the IVPA. Today I will be joined by Ariana Toomey and Melanie Goldring from AIUTA. So please listen as we explore the work that AIUTA does and what kinds of things they've had to put in place to accommodate people with special needs and disabilities. Their organization primarily focuses on sending people with diabetes abroad to partner with other community resources in the Dominican Republic, where people are facing life with diabetes as well. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. So the first question I have for you is just, can you tell us a little bit about your organization's mission and volunteer opportunities?
Absolutely. So my name is Melanie Goldring. I'm the Director of Programs for AIUTA, and I've actually been a volunteer with them since 2012, have transitioned through our different leadership positions, and I'm now staff. And I'm very excited to be telling you about what we're doing in our program. So AIUTA was founded 20 years ago, really under the notion that a lack of education is just as dangerous as a lack of insulin. So even though a lot of families across the world, but specifically in the countries we work with, which is in Latin American countries, they may have access to supplies or get their diagnosis of living with diabetes, but there's not that holistic education to really teach them how to live with it. And then growing out of that idea, the programs were created with the idea that youth can serve as agents of change for other youth. So all of our volunteers are also young people, minimum age of 16, and then there really is no maximum age, with this idea of inspiring youth by using youth as agents of change. And then this concept of understanding is just as important as doing. So really getting a full understanding of what is the condition and then putting into action all the education. Our mission is to empower youth to serve as agents of change in diabetes communities around the world, really under this idea that passionate youth can be leaders of social change, that building up youth leadership leads to building up strong local diabetes communities, keeping AIUTA as a sustainable and collaborative organization. So we always partner with a local organization in the country that we go to and work through them, through their volunteers, and through their community to really make sure we're locally defined, and then all together to ensure that the families we work with, the children and adults living with diabetes, have happier and healthier lives with the conditions. The way that we do this is through, right now, two summer volunteer programs in partnership with Aprendiendo a Vivir, which is a local diabetes organization in Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic, where our programs are based. In the past, we have worked with organizations in a variety of countries. We started out in Quito, Ecuador, with an organization called Fundación Diabetes Juvenil Ecuador, and then we also actually have worked in Haiti. That's the only country we worked in where the primary language is not Spanish. But our program is really structured such that we send two groups of volunteers to the Dominican Republic to partner with their local volunteers and do diabetes initiatives through workshops and camps. But our program is really much bigger than that. We put a lot of time and investment into our volunteers themselves because, as I said before, we really want them to be agents of social change and want them to have the skills to do that in areas outside of diabetes and health if that's where their interests lie. So we go through a really thorough 12-week volunteer training program and then an in-person weekend summit. The 12-week program is online, and that's really to make sure our volunteers are prepared to work with other families of diabetes, so giving them that diabetes knowledge, making sure they understand the partners we're working with, and then teaching them skills about social entrepreneurship. And then they channel all of those into our two summer programs that I mentioned before. One is called En el Camino, and the other is called Campo Amigo. Campo Amigo was our main program, and it's this idea of getting our volunteers to work with the local volunteers to build dynamic and engaging diabetes education activities that we carry out over two diabetes camps over two different weekends. And that's really to bring in the entire family to help them get a better understanding of how to live healthily and happily with the condition of diabetes. And then a couple years ago, we piloted the other program I mentioned, En el Camino, and this is so that the local organization can really expand their reach. The camps through Campo Amigo are in the capital in Santo Domingo where the organization is, but there are a lot of other provinces farther out in the country and Aprendí and Nueva Vivir really wanted to make sure they were getting support as well. So we do 5 different trips to different provinces and do half-day workshops that really come out of that same model as the camp activities that we do.
Wow, that's incredible work. And I can even hear, you know, in some of the things that you described, like the standards and best practices that the IVPA recommends. And so thank you for sharing all of that really exciting information about your organization. Yeah. You touched on this already, but if you could go into a little bit more detail, can you tell us a little bit about the community that you're working with? Who are those in-country partners or hosts? And also, what does the volunteer work entail?
Absolutely. So our in-country hosts are always local diabetes organizations. I'll speak more specifically to Aprende and Nueva Vivir since we are working with them right now. So their organization was started by someone who was born and raised in the Dominican Republic, but actually had spent some time in the U.S. and was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in the U.S. And he found that he was really given this very thorough support on how to live with diabetes and not have it hinder his lifestyle. And then when he went back to the DR, he saw that there really wasn't that support in place and started Aprende a Nueva Vivir to meet that community need. And through that, they built up local staff and started partnering with Ayuda about 10 years ago. And every year we do these camps. But what I've seen over the past 5 years of being in the DR, my first year was in Ecuador, then I transitioned over to the DR, is that their own youth leadership has grown immensely. And that's really the whole goal. And also one of the reasons why we don't go back to Ecuador anymore, because the local partners' capacity was built up so much that they could do it without us needing to come. And that's the whole idea about creating sustainable change, is that we shouldn't have to keep bringing in outside people, but that the community can support themselves and really work with what's defined as their community need. So what with Aprende a Nueva Vivir in the DR, we have a group of local volunteers there who are about as large as the group of volunteers that we bring, which is vastly different than what it was my first year. My first year, I would say there were only 2 or 3 who were involved daily in the planning and execution. More would show up on the days of camp, and now we have more than 10 or 15 volunteers daily working with us. And that's really exciting to see. And hopefully, although it would be sad, mean that one day they don't need us to come back because they're really able to do it on their own. So they're very community-based, very locally defined, which is really how we want the programs to be, so that the practices that they put in place will actually be utilized by the community and the community will be receptive to them. Another thing about the local partner organization is that they don't just do the summer programs with us, but they do weekly education sessions year-round. So the families aren't left high and dry throughout the year, but they really are given constant support, constant education, and you really see a lot of community building and friendships developing at Aprende a Nueva Vivir.
Wow, that's incredible. And I just, again, I want to highlight that it's amazing work that you're doing, especially when you are not creating dependency, but actually, you know, working with the local community leaders to make sure that it is a community-driven, you know, organization and really focused on building capacity. Like you said, that's just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your organization, it stands out because of your ability to provide experiences abroad for people with living with diabetes. What kinds of things did you need to consider when setting up programs abroad for people with diabetes?
So since our organization is obviously about bringing diabetes education, from the start, we always wanted to make sure that we could support volunteers who also live with diabetes. It's not a requirement of the programs, but it is something that, you know, we get really excited about because the youth that we work with can see other youth living healthily, happily with diabetes. So from the start, we really wanted to make sure that they felt they could sustain their own care abroad on our program. And so what we do is we always do a health and safety online training as part of our 12-week training related to diabetes and also just related to health and safety in general. So we really want to make sure that we highlight what we've noticed has been really helpful in terms of what vaccine should they have, immunization should they have, what's recommended, what's required, and then some best practices from past volunteers living with diabetes, even small things such as how many, you know, of this supply should you bring, or how easy is it to access a pharmacy there, which it actually is fairly easy, which is nice, but our new volunteers don't necessarily know that. So we really want to make sure that we emphasize that we've thought this through and have put in place measures so that they can feel like they can keep up their care. Another thing we do is we establish a relationship with a local doctor who is on call 24/7 for our volunteers. And that way, should anything go you know, go wrong, diabetes related or not, we have a local contact who can get us immediate care. Something else that we do, which really has been our most successful effort to support our volunteers, is we bring a healthcare professional volunteer with us. This is somebody who participates in the programs, helps support the different education that we do, but also is uniquely focused on the care of our volunteers. They're not there to micromanage that care, but they're there to support whatever it is that a volunteer could need. So whether that be related to their diabetes, whether they get a stomach bug, we really want to make sure that our volunteers know that we value their health and safety. Something that we've noticed recently from the past few years and also that came back through our volunteer feedback, since we always do evaluations and make changes based on that, is that we're trying to grow our support for volunteers who live with mental health conditions. A few years ago, we found that we weren't necessarily supporting them as best as we could, and so we're trying really hard to update our health forms and ask more specific questions so that we can make sure that we are providing them with the support they need to be successful. One of the main things that we noticed was, you know, going abroad, you're away from your home supports, you're away from your home care, potentially for mental health. If you're seeing a therapist or anything like that, a psychiatrist once a week, you know, you're removed from that. So what can we do to work with our volunteers before they go abroad to really make sure that their support is in place? And that's something we're really trying to foster right now.
Great. I mean, it just sounds like you've obviously come a long way in developing a very comprehensive look at all of the health needs of the volunteers you're sending. You know, in reflecting about this work that you've done to make experiences more accessible, what advice would you give to other organizations who are starting to make changes to make their offerings more accommodating or accessible for people with disabilities or special needs? And were there any challenges you learned from that you would be willing to share your wisdom about?
I think something that I would recommend is planning early and really communicating with the volunteers coming on program. So we ask for health information as soon as the person is accepted, and we follow up with anything that we're not clear about. And we also ask, you know, what can we do for you while you're abroad? And we want to make sure that that line of communication is really open so that by the time they get in country, they feel like they can come to us if something comes up health-related. As I mentioned before, we always do evaluations at the end of programs, and we really do go through every single volunteer's feedback. And so we look a lot about if there are comments about how the volunteer's care was managed in country, if there's something they think that could be improved, if they felt supported by the healthcare professional specifically. So a lot of that is about, you know, like I said, communication with the volunteer in a variety of aspects before, during evaluation, in country. As I mentioned before, with the mental health needs of some of our volunteers, that was a challenge a few years ago, and we're really trying to, like I said, improve our support for that. Fortunately, in terms of including volunteers with diabetes, since our programs are based on diabetes education, in country, the local partners and our volunteers are very knowledgeable about the condition, so the support is really deep and well-founded, but we are trying to grow that for people who come on the programs living with other conditions or dealing with other health problems. So I would say my number one recommendation would be just making sure that the volunteers feel like they can communicate with you as staff and that they know that they're being valued and supported. And also to really pay attention to feedback and improve and change programs based on that, because a lot of times people aren't willing to step up and just say, I didn't feel like, you know, this program was inclusive of my needs, but they'll write it down in an anonymous form. So really providing different ways to get that information and then improve from there.
That is very good advice. I mean, it almost is similar to what we recommend with, you know, asking a community what their needs are before you start projects. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like asking people with disabilities or people who need accommodations, like, what would work best for you? So I really appreciate your reflection on that, and I appreciate your time. And this has been just an incredible conversation. So thank you so much for being a part of this.
Yeah, I mean, actually something I just thought of just to add is we try to be really flexible in country. So we set up for our volunteers accommodation and most of the food options, or at least recommend different food options for meals. And as people let us know about different health needs, we very intentionally try to work with the local partners to ask them how we can build local support. So, for example, in the past, we've had a volunteer who, because of certain health needs and things during the night, really needed to be in their own room rather than sharing a room with someone else. And so we made sure that we could set that up so that they could still be on program. Or we've had people who come who have health, you know, food allergies or anything like that. So making sure we provide restaurant options and recommendations that will be able to you know, fulfill our volunteers' needs so that they can still eat in country. So again, just going back to that, really listening to them and trying to be proactive about providing support.
Great. Well, again, thank you so much. And this has been just a really informative conversation for me, and I'm sure for other listeners as well. And what is the website that people should go to if they want to know more about your organization?
So our website is IUDA Inc., all lowercase one word, .net. And from there, you can see our background on IUDA as an organization. You can look at our volunteer opportunities. You can also see what our training entails and what information we provide to our volunteers to support them in country. It's all public. We like to be very transparent about how our program works and who our volunteers are and all of that. So please visit IUDAinc.net to find out a lot more information.
Great. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Molly.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
That wraps up my conversation with Melanie, but stay tuned to hear more from Ariana as she dives deeper into considerations for organizations that are trying to accommodate people with disabilities and for people with disabilities considering an international volunteer experience.
Ariana, I just asked Melanie about, you know, if in reflecting on the work that you've done to make experiences more accessible, what advice would you offer to the other organizations who are starting to make changes to their offerings to be more accommodating or accessible for people with disabilities and special needs? And on top of that, were there any challenges that you learned from that you'd be willing to share?
Right. So one of the things we've done on our programs is provide a healthcare professional, so a nurse or a physician or a diabetes educator. So they come on each of our trips and they stay with us in our hotel, and they're available to help our volunteers and provide care for them 24/7. So I think this really helps assuage the fears of our volunteers who have diabetes and their parents if the volunteers are on the younger side, because that help is so easily accessible. And then additionally, since our program is centered around diabetes, a large part of our pre-program training consists of diabetes education. So that's obviously essential for our programs, but it also helps our volunteers who don't have diabetes understand the struggles of our volunteers who do have diabetes and go through the struggles on a daily basis. So we believe that having support from all sides, especially when you're far away from home and in a different culture, is extremely important. So I guess that's kind of some of the advice I would give to other organizations.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for adding that. So if someone is thinking about doing volunteer work internationally, what first step recommendations do you have for them?
I would recommend the first step is to find a program that aligns with your passions or interests. A lot of our volunteers apply to our program because they want to volunteer in different diabetes communities, or they want to practice their Spanish or work with public health or medicine in the future. So if you find a program that aligns with your existing interests in some way, it will help make that volunteer experience that much more impactful for you and for the people you're helping.
Wonderful. And, you know, in thinking about when people are exploring, you know, the different options, are there any questions they should be asking potential providers of these experiences? And is there anything specific for people with disabilities that you would include in those recommendations?
When thinking about volunteering abroad, I would look for programs and providers that are focused on sustainability in the country they're volunteering in. If you go to a country for a week just to set up mobile clinics and you help for that week and then you leave, you really aren't helping that community in the long run. So that's why we work with the diabetes organization Aprendiendo a Vivir in the Dominican Republic year-round, so that we're really helping to build up their program so that they can provide these services to people with diabetes in the future without our help. And specifically for people with disabilities, I would look for programs that have a clear support system for you. As I said, we have our healthcare professionals and that education of diabetes for our program, so something like that would really help support you and make you comfortable so you can help other people in your volunteer experience.
That's wonderful, and that's such a great point about really tuning into what the sustainability is of those volunteer activities. So I really appreciate that perspective. Let's see. So from your perspective, do you think there's still some major gaps for providing opportunities for people with disabilities to volunteer internationally? Are you optimistic there's going to be more opportunities in the future? And what specifically needs to be in place to fill the gaps?
Well, I do think there is a gap, but I think we're also moving towards a place of inclusivity and more opportunities for people with diabetes are appearing. I think more programs that use peer-to-peer education like we do would help close the gap by having people with disabilities help other people with the same disabilities in communities abroad.
Great. That's wonderful to hear. And as we're kind of starting these podcasts off as a way to spread more information widely about the IVPA and what member organizations are doing, can you tell us why AIUDA decided to join the IVPA or why you remain an active member organization?
Well, we decided to join IVPA to be a part of this community of international volunteer organizations dedicated to making the world a better place. And one thing that we specifically love about IVPA is what I was talking about earlier, your commitment to sustainable programs that make a continued difference in communities abroad. And we're really just looking forward to what IVPA has in store for the future.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, and I really look forward to speaking with you soon.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.